listener production.
G'day, I'm Scott Phillips, the Chief Investment Officer of The Motley Fool, and welcome to The Good Oil. Now, you know by now, The Good Oil is giving someone the good stuff, the important stuff, and the real stuff. And that's the aim of this podcast. We're bringing you conversations with entrepreneurs, executives, and experts, the people who know what's going on, and the people who make things happen. And today's guest is someone who really does make things happen, and makes it happen a long, long way from anywhere. Greg Donovan is the creator, founder, and boss cocky of the world's most remote music festival, the Birdsville Big Red Bash. Greg, welcome to The Good Oil.
G'day, Scott. Great to be here.
Mate, thank you for joining us. As you know, I did attend this year's event. I also attended in 2019, and my mother is up to the Mundi Bash this year. We'll talk about that one as well in a minute, mate. So I'm on record. I'm a card-carrying member of the Big Red Bash fan club, mate.
That's great.
Now, like I said, I've just come back from the bash. This year you had people like Jimmy Barnes, Casey Chambers, Missy Higgins, John Stevens, Mark Gable, Chocolate Starfish, just an absolute cavalcade of Australian music stars to sing at the foot of the largest sand dune in the Simpson Desert. Now, that's a hell of a feat. But I reckon more impressively, mate, you managed to get the population of Birdsville from 100-odd people normally most of the year to just a tick over, was it 12,000?
11,000.
For a few days.
Yeah, about
11,000.
Yes.
Mate, so the question is, how do you get 11,000 people to drive to what's close enough to the middle of the country for a three-day music festival?
Well, it's the old saying, is it, build it and they will come, and they do come.
Mate, and you built it and they did come. It's a remarkable, I mean, Birdsville is literally, I mean, I'll say the middle of everywhere rather than the middle of nowhere, but because it almost literally is the middle of the country. You guys built it as the most remote music festival in the world. It must be almost by definition. It is such a long way from anywhere. I think our drive time was something like 25 hours each way. We did the long route. We did a bit of a tour on the way up. But you have people come from Perth, from Brisbane, from Alice, from Adelaide, from Tassie, Melbourne. You guys run a Facebook group, which everyone joins and kind of talks about their journey in. Mate, I'll get to the bash in a sec, but it almost came about by accident. You ran a fundraising marathon, a series of marathons, including one on the top of the Big Red Sand Dune, which is in the Simpson Desert.
Yeah, that's right. That's how it all started. And actually, just going back to that point you made of where people come from everywhere, they do come from everywhere. Yeah. We've done a bit of a calculation, and we think the average travel for each person is about 4,500 kilometres generally, and that's probably about what you travelled, I guess. And you multiply that by 11,000 people, that adds up to 50 million kilometres. And I don't think there's any other event in Australia where that I know of where people travel a combined 50 million kilometres to attend, with an AFL grand final or anything. It's crazy. People come from, like a pilgrimage. But
It really is. I mean, 5,500 was my odometer. I checked it when I got home. just quietly too, mate. It's a fair old investment these days with petrol and diesel at the price they are, because it was, every time I'd stop and fill the tank, I'd go to half faint and get back in the car and keep going. But you're right, mate. There's people, I mean, was it 50 million? That's just an extraordinary, extraordinary dedication to the event.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, with the way diesel fuel is at the moment, we also did a calculation and we figured out that people spent about $2.7 million over and above what they previously would have spent just to drive to the event. So, all thanks to Vladimir, our good mate over there.
Someone's making a bob, it's not us, is it? Yeah, exactly.
Oil market.
Exactly.
Yeah, look at the graph of the world oil market, and it's peak about the time of the bash, unfortunately, but anyway.
And everyone still came, mate. Everyone still came. I think it is a pilgrimage is the right word. I think it's the event. I'm sure most of our listeners have heard of it. I'm sure some have been as well. It is one of those things that people do. It's become a bucket list destination, a bucket list event, something that people don't want to miss. Well, I'll get back to that, but maybe if you just take us back to the beginning, mate. It was born on the back of a fundraising marathon.
Yeah, that's right. We was at 250 kilometres over 6 days, and we did that to raise funds for juvenile diabetes. My son's type 1 diabetes. So it's really a running event. You know, I did a lot of other running in other deserts around the world, and but there was to raise funds for type 1, but there was no running events in Australia like that. So I decided, well, let's start one. Why not? Why can't Australia have a running event? We've got lots of deserts. So let's have it. So we started up a running event. We called it the Big Red Run. It was set, the Big Red Simpson Desert near, camping base at the Big Red Dune, and we sort of ran 6 days, various places around the Simpson Desert out of there. And
amazing.
But when we first started up, we thought, oh, we need, something to celebrate the fact we're starting this new charity event. Hopefully it'll have a long... I'd like to come out and play some music for us on the Big Red Dune. He actually had just recently released an album called The Big Red, and we thought, oh, that'll fit. It's Jim Williamson to play up there. But on the first day of our running event, I just ran a marathon that morning from Bird Flat to Big Red. Oh, and God knows how many dunes I was absolutely buggered.
Yeah, I bet you were.
And I had to put this music event on, which we did on the first day of the 6 days. So that's sort of... so we never really started off to with any objective to start a music festival or anything like that. It was just that little thing, and it was really only for the runners and the volunteers and all that sort of stuff. But a few people got word that John Williamson's coming out in the Birdsville, and he's going to play the Big Red Dune. The bushcraft kicks in, and people point out about it. People start getting in touch saying, how do we come and watch this? And I thought, oh, bugger it, we'll just sell a few tickets just to cover some of the costs. And sold a couple of hundred tickets, and probably have 500 people there between the people who bought tickets and our people who runners and volunteers and a few of the locals from Birdsville. And nice little, it was a great little show on top of Big Red. And the little light bulb went on, and thought, oh, well, this is maybe we should take this a little bit further. People really love the fact that, the big freedom of being out in the desert and having greatest. There was a bit of an idea to try and take it and see what we could do with it. Maybe if you're going to drag a stage out there, maybe, and all the other stuff, maybe we'll get a couple more artists and see if we can do something over a couple of days. And it's just sort of just grown from there, basically. It's no grand plan.
I love it. Mate, tell me about that no grand plan. A lot of our listeners are people who are in business or entrepreneurs or have their own businesses. It's one thing to go, let's ask John Williamson to come and play after a marathon. And as you say, it makes some logical sense just to go, well, what if we just did a bit more of it and try to make it a bit bigger? But that's not a small feat. It's not a small commitment. That's a hell of a step to take. Can you take us back to that point? Now, next year's the 10th anniversary. So
yes.
Go from 2003 to 2004.
Yep.
You start to think, maybe this could work.
Yep.
But is it not at some point you say, okay, well, I mean, this is going to cost money and time and effort, and people mightn't come. And how do you go from the idea of like, hey, the Williamson concert was great, to let's commit time, effort, energy, all that stuff, to something that's never been done before in Australia? It is the most remote music festival in the world. I mean, even a couple of years ago, people might still say, Greg, you sure, mate? This still sounds a bit crazy. Year one or year two, the first time post John Williamson.
Yeah, well, it's...
What goes through your head? How do you get to the point of going, you know what, let's actually do this?
Yeah, it's a leap of faith, and, it's something you do based on, I guess, gut feel or intuition or... stupidity, whatever you want to call it, but a lot of people saying this, it's ridiculous. It's a crazy idea, how it costs. A, how much is it going out here? And B, where are the people going to come from? And I thought, well, they're probably pretty valid sort of, but unless you give it a go, you're never going to know. What's your market research? Well, how do you do market research on something?
Who are you going to ask? Exactly.
Ask, what are they going to say? The market research is, they've got a horse race up here, and about 6,000 people turn up to a horse race in Birdsville. I reckon if we put something really special on the music side, well, why wouldn't they turn up for that? That's about as the extent of the market research I did.
I love it, mate.
But no, I think we started small. The next year, I mean, it was a massive commitment of funds to get it up and going. And I think we had about a dozen artists and 2 days. We had to build a stage and work out how we had no idea about how the music industry works or festivals or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
We were just sort of, it was just seat of your pants stuff, really. And it was. Yeah, it was cost a lot of money, and we had grand plans of how many people might turn up, and not that many people turned up, and we went home with our tail between our legs, having lost a lot of money, thinking, well, that was pretty right. This probably was a stupid idea, but
and yet you went back for year three. So okay, maybe the bigger question isn't how do you go from John Williamson to trying it, but how do you go back the second time or the third time? How do you kind of lose a lot of money? You kind of go, gee, this wasn't as good as we hoped. Let's maybe make it the next time around. Is there some sort of optimism gene or is it just built in your personality? Or how do you do the third one around?
Yeah, I call it a turning point. It was definitely we had about 1,100 people, I think, in 2014. A lot of money, but we sort of learned a lot of things about what we should and shouldn't do. So, you know, we're starting to learn a little bit about the music and individuals and that and so forth, and had a big debrief. And, you know, really, as I said before, I was made redundant. I came back to the office and talked to the girls and the staff here and, oh, look, just stick to the running thing. And that's what we started doing, you know, and but then, you know, the next week it's I thought, stuff it, I've got a lot of time on my hands. We may as well keep it. I'm certainly not going to apply for any more jobs in the corporate world. I don't feel like that. But, yeah, so it's, yeah, we got about 3,000 off the back of getting Jimmy Barnes. And I think the fact that, you know, it's small, something small, you know, it takes a while for the word to get out, people to realise what it's about. And yeah, 3,000 people. And, look, I don't think, it depends how you measure it, but I don't think we really made any money, but we stopped hemorrhaging, if you like. And but more so than that, you know, it was a good show. It was pretty basic compared to what we do nowadays, but it was a good show. People loved it, and you know, it's the old thing. It's the word of mouth then starts, and you know, that's where it sort of kicked off from there.
Mate, I don't reckon our listeners can really grasp the enormity of the event as it is today. So from 1,100 people to 11,000 people in less than 10 years, you guys, the photos of the before and after are a, you know, arid desert landscape with not a thing there. It's a cattle station, Adria Downs cattle station, an organic cattle station. You guys bring a city together. You know, without a word of a lie, I don't know many rural towns, rural, even regional towns with 11,000 people. You bring the entire kit and caboodle. You set up a town and then you take it away 5 days later. I can't imagine the enormity of that, mate. My business brain, when I was there, I was enjoying the music, I was enjoying the camp, I was loving the stars and the campfire, having an absolute ball. But part of me is thinking, I'm looking around and thinking, you got to work out how many of these, how you get that there, who brings it in, who manages that. You have, is it a few hundred volunteers, paid staff? You have the most amazing, this is going to sound weird for listeners, you have the most amazing toilet system. You've got these compostable toilets that literally get wheeled away. You start with nothing, you leave literally nothing. It must be a week or so later. Just talk to me about the enormity of that process, because I honestly still can't get my head around having to do that, and you guys do it every single year.
Yeah, no, it is a really big job, and it's interesting to say, like 11,000 people. If you look at that, we're the second largest town west of the Great Dividing, Queensland.
There you go. That's crazy, isn't it?
It's big, and you know, we've got nothing out there now. No power, no water, no infrastructure, no communications, nothing. So it's in the middle of nowhere. So it's a huge effort to work out what you need to do to provide the essentials of sort of day-to-day living. Obviously, people, you know, like yourselves and others who come in their vans are pretty well set up with stuff, but, you know, still we've got to provide, you know, say just the toileting systems. We had manufactured our own sort of toileting system using the composting sort of method, which is fantastic. It, you know, uses sawdust, water, and it's they're so good compared to your normal port-a-loose situation. So, you know, we built about 270 of those, and they're all flat packed, and we put them together every year. And
that's amazing.
All we end up with at the end of the year is 500 or 600 wheelie bins full of poo and sawdust, and we put them out in the baking sun in Burnsville, and we come back the next year, and there's nothing, which is fantastic. So
unbelievable.
We're bringing we mark out 4,500 campsites. You know, that's all done. It's plotted on GPS and.
Right.
Whole site's really designed on GPS, really down, you know, and it's measured out and set out, you know, to the nearest sort of, you know, 20 centimetres, I guess. Everything's perfectly measured out and perfectly designed. And, you know, then we bring in so much gear and equipment, you know, water and generators. We have to bring in our own satellite internet situation. And then you know, we've got a fleet of trucks and trucks and utes and vans, and everything gets shipped in. You see the stage and all the
products.
It's massive.
Yeah,
and,
it's huge.
It's amazing. So, you know, we do build a little city out of nowhere. And as you're right, once we leave, and you know, I normally before, you know, after our 5-day pack down, I normally the night before we leave, I go there with my wife Raylene and we sit up on top of Big Red and have a glass of champagne and watch the sunset and have a look at what was out there. It's just down back to nothing. You wouldn't even know anyone's been there. It's amazing. So it's a logistics feat. We've got a really great team of people who specialise in outback, you know, logistics and management, and you know, and being able to be nimble and flexible, and you know, work under sort of, you know, fairly harsh conditions and that sort of stuff. You've got to have the right team, and you know, it's like just in business, it's the same as it is business. You've got to have the right people around you with the right skills, and that's what makes it work.
Even you know, things like the signage, you mark out roads, safety barriers, just the really like the stuff that's just, you know, it's not just a matter of, hey, how many sites, how many satellite trucks on a stage. It's every single thing that goes with it. I'm a massive, massive fan. As I said, I you know, we had a great time in 2019, had a great time again this year. And I just rave about it because the people are great. The music is great. You guys put on a spectacular event. You get volunteers to come and help out. And then you pack it up and again, organic cattle station, nothing's left there. And it goes back to normal. It is just phenomenal. Mate, speaking of challenges, and I am slightly amused, if you don't mind. You were an insurance executive, but I understand that up until recently, maybe not even recently, you didn't have weather insurance for the Bash. It almost caught you out in 2016. I kind of thought I could almost understand not thinking about weather insurance. But then when you said I worked in an insurance company, I'm thinking, That one to me strikes me as, did you kick yourself and think, man, I did this for 20 years. Why did I not have weather insurance?
Yeah, I did. I mucked around in, as the event grew, in 2016, I sort of did a fair bit of work in the background, mucking around trying to get weather insurance. And because it's in such a remote location, it's an unusual event, it never rained. But, you know, we couldn't get interest from the market I probably could have, but yeah. I was so busy, you know, if I kept banging away and working with different brokers and trying to get some interest in insuring the event, I probably could have eventually got insurance, but I was just so busy and it was just one of those things that got parked.
Yeah.
I thought, well, you know, what's our risk? Risk is mainly rain. You know, we won't worry about it. And, you know, 2016, we're out doing Big Red Run. We were camped out there at the Big Red June, sort of a couple of weeks before we were about to put the Big Red Bash on. And, you know, we had had a fair bit of rain over a couple of days, 20 mil or something. But that's all it takes out there to turn the landscape into an absolute quagmire. Where we all set up our camp there, it's on a dry lake bed, and it's sort of like a clay sort of stuff, and it's just horrible. You know, you walk around and it's 6 inches of clay in your shoes, and even the road between Red was dirt, and you know, huge puddles of people getting bogged, and we went trying to get out and trying to get for a drive back into Birdsville, and there's bird life had taken up in the, you know, on the road, and the puddle was horrible. And, you know, I was sort of, you know, tossing and turning at night when we were doing the run, going, well, how the hell are we going to get this concert on out here? Oh, we've got got a lot of money on the line here, and I don't think we can put this concert on here. How are we going to get trucks in? You know, all of that sort of stuff. And it wasn't even that. There was floods, you know, in the Cooper Creek, and we couldn't, you know, nobody could even get to Birdsville. The roads coming in and out of Birdsville closed. It was just a nightmare. And so I went into, I saw the council there and said, look, I don't think we put this concert on out at Big Red. I said, I think I need to put it on in Birdsville. And, you know, so, yeah, Greg, it's, yeah. He said, what were you thinking? I said, oh, I'll just put it on at the Oval over there, you know, opposite the pub, you know, you're right. And, and anyway, the council had a meeting and they said, yeah, that's all right. Yeah, Greg, you can put on the Oval there. That's no worries. Just pop into the office and sign a booking form, you know. It's like we had to sort of spend then a lot of time rejigging all of the logistics and event plan. Everything really was turned on its head, and to try and put back then we had about 7,000 people in 2016, but put a 7,000 per person event, dump that in the middle of a little town of 100 things back in the middle of a little town of 100 people causes some issues. But we did it, and you know, everybody was glad that the event went ahead. And then coming the next year, obviously I did spend a lot more time making sure
you'll never need it again.
Hopefully not, touch wood, but if we do, it's there. So that's the main thing.
And mate, we can't skip through the COVID years. You had a tough couple of years with COVID impacting people's ability to get there and the size of the event and cancellations and all that kind of stuff. Is it far enough behind you now to be able to reflect on it with a wry smile, or is it still pretty painful?
Oh, look, it was a horrific period, you know, for the live music industry, as it was many other industries. You know, I mean, COVID's a bit of a funny beast when it come to, you know, business. A lot of businesses really took off during COVID because of the nature of businesses, and others like ours basically had to go into hibernation and support, you know, rely on, you know, dribs and drabs of government support just to sort of, you know, to enable us to sort of keep employing people and survive. So it was a really hard thing. You know, we went from off the back of 2019, as you know, you were there, and that was a fair event, and the 2020 event off the back of a great 19 event was sold out. I think within, I don't know, 6 weeks or 8 weeks or something, we fully sold it out, 10,000 people. So we were looking at our most successful year ever at 2020, and it went from all of a sudden being our most successful sold out year to the worst year on record because, you know, we had to cancel. And, you know, talking about insurance, you know, we can insure against weather, but, you know, most of these contagious disease is an exclusion in, you know, in most insurance policies. So you can't rely on insurance to bail you out. I did actually take the insurers to court. We thought the exclusion clause was not really relevant in some ways, and we had a bit of a court battle over that in the federal court, but didn't get too far with that, unfortunately. So it was not great, but I sort of, you know, I guess going back to the early days and how we got this business going and started this business, you got to sometimes be a bit bold and just follow your instinct and follow your gut. And I thought, well, you know, we've got a year off. You know, I don't want to necessarily just sit around and twiddle my thumbs for a year. ScoMo said that this thing's going to last for 6 months. So this is such a great event. Let's crack on and get another one up and going in Monday out of Broken Hill. So it's something that we've been going with for a number of years. And off the back of the success in 2016, you know, once it grew to that amount, to that big, we thought, yeah, there's definitely room for another one of these events in Australia, so let's get one started. But we just really never had time to do anything. So I sort of looked at COVID and say, well, that's it's given me the gift of time, and let's use that time productively and use that to start a new festival. And again, people saying it's crazy, you know, why would you start a music festival in the middle of pandemic?
Yeah, exactly. Man, you've done nothing but, if not upset the status quo. Tell me about the Monday Bash. So this is a sister festival held at the back of Broken Hill. If you haven't been there, it's just driving from Broken Hill onto the Monday plan is overlooking that view. I haven't been to the festival itself, Greg. As I said, my mother's going this year, so she'll give me the good oil when she gets back. But mate, it is a spectacular location, just a beautiful location. This year around, I'm doubly jealous of my mother. I got to swim in No Oil in 2019, play at Big Red. You've actually managed to hook them to headline Monday with Jimmy Barnes and the rest of the crew that were at the Birdsville Big Red Bash this year. That is going to be a sensational event.
Oh, look, what a lineup. I mean, to get sort of Jimmy Barnes and Midnight Oil on the same bill together, I think this Midnight Oil's last tour. And, you know, so it's a really special thing. We're really privileged to be able to present, you know, the classic Australian rock lineup with both of those playing. But Monday is a fantastic location. It's you know, as you say, you've probably driven up to the Monday lookout over the back of Silk. Fantastic spots where they shot a lot of the Mad Max film down there and that area. And in fact, it's where like Midnight Oil film their Beds of Burning clip down on the Monday
plate. They did. That's right.
So look, it's you know, the idea for us was that Birdsville, being a fantastic location, but it's can be a little bit hard for people to get to, you know, a lot of dirt for people to travel on, and it is a long way from anywhere. And the next festival we'll do in an equally iconic and beautiful outback location, but try and make it a little bit more accessible for people who don't have an off-road van or don't want to drive on the dirt roads, don't want to spend 4,000, 5,000 kilometres travelling, all that stuff. So, but, you know, we figured we've got the event model down pat, you know, the actual operating plan, the whole design, everything that we do works well. So it's just a matter of picking that up and dropping that into a new location. And it just proved when we did that inaugural festival in April this year, just proved that the model really was transportable because it just went so smoothly as a first up event. You know, we had about 9,000 people, and you know, to have that as a first up event was, you know, was amazing. We were really, really pleased. It's a big gamble. You know, we're starting off this one at big, you know, and rather than like Big Red, we start off small and real big. Here we were just starting it off big, so it was, you know, big fingers crossed. You know, you build it and they will come, and hopefully they will, and they did, which is great.
What do you put the bash success down to, mate? I mean, obviously a whole lot of hard work. And as I said, I am a massive, massive fan. You guys did such a spectacular job. I have my view, but what based on your own observations or feedback, what is it that makes the Birdswell Big Red Bash and the Monday Bash so special as destinations, as festivals? There's so many music options. There are so many outback options. You know, we're spoiled for choice in Australia. There are so many different things we could do, places we could go. What do you reckon makes the Bashes just that bucket list destination and event for so many people?
Yeah, well, I think, look, there's a lot of different things that come into it. I think they are unique events, so that's not, you know, we're not competing against anything that's sort of all that similar. You know, Blues Fest or a Tamworth Country Music Festival or other camping-based festivals. But, you know, we're trying to appeal to a demographic, you know, that may not have those sort of choices in festivals. Nowadays, there's a lot of festivals for the younger generations, the Falls and the Splendour and all of these, you know, all of the those sort of those things. But, you know, for something now for the demographic of people sort of in their 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s with families, and they want to experience, you know, the outback. They want to experience travel, the freedom, and all of that sort of stuff. So I think the music and the festival is really the icing on the cake of what is a travel experience sort of product, if you like. It's about that, but it's about the vibe of the sort of people we get to our festival. You know, you experience it yourself. It's, you know, we get a great bunch of people. Everybody's, you know, happy. There's no aggro. There's no dramas, you know. There's no drugs. There's nothing like that. It's really Australia. You can bring your dog. You can have a fire.
That's fantastic too, yeah.
You can bring your own grog. I don't think, you know, like all just those three things, the basic things, you know, of having a fire and bringing your dog and bringing your own grog. I mean, you can't do that, any of those things in it. Festival, let alone all three of them.
That's true.
But so, you know, those sort of things, you've got your van, you've got 100 square meter site for your van, you're meeting from all over Australia, you know, and then standing up on Big Red, I mean, that is an experience in itself. You can look way out to one side and all you can see is the desert and looking over the campground and watching the music from up there or kids sliding down on their boogie boards or having yoga up there in the morning or whatever. It's just a really, you know, it's the freedom, the camaraderie, and the travel and the tales and the stories that people come back with. You know, it's, you know, if you go to a Day on the Green, say, concert or, you know, any of these one-day concerts you go to on a Sunday, well, you know, you've got the weekend off, you head up to the concert, you do the concert on the Sunday, you've got to go to work on the Monday, so not as many people are
true.
Everybody out in the bash, you know, they're all on a holiday. No one's going back to work the next day. They're all travelling and continuing to enjoy themselves.
Yeah, I like it, mate. I think everything you've just said absolutely rings true for me. Everyone's in such a good mood. The people are spectacular. I didn't hear a crossword at either of the two times I've been there, let alone everyone's just there to have a good time and help each other out and hang out with each other and just have a really, really good time. Even the front of the mosh pit when Barnsley was going off, we took the kids down there. My young bloke's 9. Like my nephews are 16 and 14, my niece is 7, and we just, you know, it's, you know, plenty of people having a dance, having a good time, but completely family friendly, just a really good group of people, all there for the right reasons. It's kind of those things. If you've driven 5,000 k's return to get there, you're probably there for the right reason. As you say, you're in a good mood, you're having a holiday. It probably is the perfect way to, as you say, ice that particular cake. It's the reason for it, but also it's not just that. You know, for those who quick plug for my socials, for those who want to follow me on Insta or Twitter or whatever, I posted a whole lot of photos of the trip up, the trip back, and time at the bash. That's a tiny amount of Telstra reception on the top of Big Red, so I used that to spam some people with some social media photos. That was about it. I don't do social much. Don't do it particularly well, but it is the whole event. Everyone's just having such a great time, which is awesome.
And we love putting it on, and I think, you know, hopefully that shows, you know, all the volunteers are such good people, and
Yes.
Crew and everybody, and we're really passionate about the event and making it a great experience. And I think that helps a lot. You know, yeah, sure, we've got to make the money work and it's a business, all of that, but you just got to do that. But it's at the end of the day, it's the passion of everybody involved and really loving seeing everybody with smiling faces and all of that. And the kids, we love the family friendly aspect of it. You know, I always travel the country and take our kids to the outback and all of that sort of stuff when they were little. And, you know, we really just wanted to develop the event as a real family friendly event. There's not a lot of music festivals that you could go to where you could say that are really truly family friendly and you can let your kids roam around.
Yes, yeah, yep.
You know, they're going to be safe. You know, they might get lost for a while or whatever, but
there's nowhere to get lost to.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a big campsite, they might have trouble finding their way back to you.
True.
Back to your where it's like a shopping centre car park. You sit there, where do I leave my car? But it's a bit like that. But yeah, you know, it's a really safe environment. We've never had any dramas at all. You've behaved, anything like that.
Yep. Yeah, Greg, I thought you were going to mention, and I'm disappointed you didn't mention that I'm a world record holder. Thanks to the Big Red Bash at Birdsville. I was one of those 4,200 odd people who danced the Nutbush for 5 minutes and 15 seconds, and in doing so, was part of the largest ever Nutbush dance in the Australian Book of Records. And I'm just going to change my Twitter bio and my Instagram profile to list world record holder. Not what I thought I'd ever be able to do, mate. Not the sort of thing I thought I'd do. That's the other thing. It's the festival atmosphere is not just the music. You guys raise a heap of money for the Royal Flying Doctor Service in particular with the Nutbush. You do I didn't do the drag race where those inclined dress up in drag and run down the dune. It is spectacular. I was on the sidelines cheering them on, but I wasn't I wasn't persuaded by my family despite their best efforts. But, you know, that raised a lot of money, and that, I think, is part of the community feel.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, we love supporting the Royal Flying Doctor Service, obviously, with being out where we are and having so many people there. We do rely on them a lot to be available there if needed. And
of course.
Hopefully they're not needed, but if they are, they're always there on hand. But that's another part of the event. When we, apart from the music, we do a whole lot of other activities, and those activities are generally crowd participation activities where become their own entertainment and bring people together. And, you know, to do the Nutbush with 4,000 plus people, I mean, that's just an experience. Yeah. Can you experience something like that? It's just the joy of people doing that, coming together and doing that, breaking a record, raising money for the Flying Doctor and, you know, and the Nutbush, not the Nutbush dance, the drag race. I brought a wig and a frock this year for the first time.
Oh, did you? I didn't see you. Were you in the race?
Well, I was the MC. I was the start. I was the race director. so it's a lot of fun, and all these things bring people together. We have talent shows and doggy fashion parades.
Yes, that's right. Air guitar.
Yeah, air guitar, all of that fun stuff, so it's not just people sort of sitting there watching the music. People can get involved and have fun and come together, and it's the whole community feel about the whole thing, which is great.
Next year, 10th anniversary of the Birdsville Big Red Bash. I think it'll be about the third or fourth Monday Bash. Big things planned. Is there any scoops you want to give us, Greg, on the podcast?
Can't tell you too much. I'd have to kill you. look, rest assured, we're working on some great things for the 10th anniversary. We wouldn't let the 10th anniversary go by without making it special. And, we're going to do our best to do that. I think there'll be, great entertainment on offer, some new acts that we haven't had before and some old ones coming back. And, it's going to be fun. We've got a few special things, and we'll probably even workshop a few more special things. I guess it's been a really busy year, and we've just got to get, we've got to get through our Monday Bash in a few weeks. And three festivals in one year. We've only done one before, and doing three. Once the dust settles from that, we'll all be sitting down and getting enthusiastic about next year and brainstorming even more fun and games to have for our 10th anniversary.
Is there a third festival on the agenda, or is Birdsville Monday enough?
No, that's enough. Anyway, we've got to have a life as well. I mean, these festivals, we work all year on them. Yeah. There's no real, downtime. People say, you get back from the festival, you can have a rest. Well, it's actually the busiest time because, for the next weeks after we get back from Monday, we're busy to getting our festivals ready to launch for next year. You know, we've got to do that at the end of October and get artists on board and websites and marketing campaigns and on it goes. So it's a really busy time. And yeah, look, I think two is a good number. You know, you don't want to get too greedy and try and do too much. I think, you know, just do two really well, and that's catering. We've got the capacity to cater for a good segment of the market, and I think that's what we want to do. I've got two of my kids involved in the business. Laura's been involved for like the whole 10 years, and Steve, right, who's son with diabetes, he's been involved for on a full-time basis for the last sort of 4 years. So, you know, it's a good family business, and we love doing it.
That's awesome, mate. Very good. I'll finish with our favourite question in a minute, mate. Just one last question about the Bash and the Bash business and the Outback Music Festival Group. Are you telling me OMFG was an acronym that just happened to turn up? Was there anything in that, Greg? Was there any deliberate in OMFG, or was that just the way it turned out?
It sort of just worked out that way. I realised it once we were sort of making it up. Oh yeah, well,
that'll do.
Putting that down, but actually, we changed our name back in, I think it was 2019 or maybe even 2020. We changed our name. We used to be called Big Run Events because we were doing big events. The business is all about the festivals now, so we changed business name, but OMFG.
There you go, mate. What have you learnt? I mean, you've gone from obviously a successful corporate career, and that you learn a lot about business and about managing people and about projects and that sort of stuff in that. But as you say, you started this thing knowing, obviously you had a bit of Outback background with the run, but you put on a music festival, you've got the music business, you've got everything from the logistics that goes with all that kind of stuff. I, again, even if I think to myself, having even been to this, and if you're sitting right now, you go and do it, Scott, I'd be like, oh, gee, that feels like a lot of work and a lot of people. And I know it's about good people, but, you know, anything kind of stands out of, you know, things you didn't know or things you've learned or things you'd do differently again, just kind of that journey over the last 10 years.
Yeah, look, I don't think there's any one-off big lessons. I think it's just been lots and lots of little things that you learn along the way. I did say, obviously, that the people that are involved, I mean, it is a people business, people drive this business, and you've got to have passionate people involved in the team. So, you know, we do that, and we make sure everyone is well looked after and feels part of a big team. You know, the volunteers, you know, we really, it's not just about calling for volunteers. We actually spend a lot of time on ensuring that our whole volunteer program is an actual experience in itself. We want to deliver a volunteer experience, so not just get volunteers. So everything we learn, we tweak it every year. And, I guess big lessons are don't be afraid to try new and different things. And, you know, every year, like even things like the drag race, you know, I thought of that in 2016, thought let's do something to have a bit of fun and come up with that idea. And
yeah,
the wife said, oh, that's stupid. No one's going to. The first year, there was about 300 people queued up. So, you know, we just try different things, and
yeah,
we're really open to ideas. You know, all of our team know that we're really open to, you know, ideas and suggestions, and we all work well as a team and discuss things, and we all value each other's opinions. And I think the fact that it's a family business, and there's myself and the two kids involved, and we run it, you know, we have those family values, and we run it, you know, run it like that family business. You know, all the lessons about cash flow, managing cash flow, you know, because it's the events business. You spend all your money front, and then, you know, really you deliver the show. So it's, you know, just a different sort of business model, events, than a normal business where you've got money coming in and out each week or month or whatever. So, yeah, managing all of those things and just fine-tuning it. Fine tuning, and never accepting, you know, and never sort of resting on your laurels.
Hey, let me finish with that favorite question we ask all of our guests. A lot of our listeners are big readers or watchers or streamers or podcasters. What are you reading or watching, or maybe given you're in the entertainment business, listening to at the moment? What's on your bedside table or in the earpods?
Well, I haven't had really a chance to listen to or do anything of late because it's just been a manic year. Just moved house and sold a new house and moved into it and trying to do three festivals. So my downtime, sitting there vegetating in front of the TV, maybe having a beer.
Good plan.
I do just a bit of fiction reading, you know, just nice, to sort of nice. Take my mind off, you know, just to relax a bit from time to time when I get a bit of a chance. But I do want to get back into more of the learning podcasts and all of that, but I haven't got any great recommendations, unfortunately.
No, fair enough. I should plug your Big Bash podcast that you do with the Duck at Blue Collar Media. I'll give that a run. You guys do a great job with that. So and the Duck's a good guy. So I'll mention that one as well. What about trends, mate? So we know that particularly in your business, trends are it, right? The way people are spending, living, doing whatever. What trends are you keeping your eye on?
Well, I think, you know, it's been an interesting few years with COVID. Obviously, you know, COVID affected business negatively, but then, you know, then I think in the long term it's probably a positive thing because people are, you know, the travel industry, the domestic travel industry, caravanning, camping, you know, all that sort of recreational industry, that absolutely boomed through COVID. And, you know, even nowadays there's still sort of 9-12 month wait to buy a caravan and that sort of stuff. So I think that part of the market has really been rediscovered by Australians, and it's a big part. It's going to be a bigger part going forward. And I think that's, you know, we're hoping that that puts our sort of events that are based around that sort of caravanning, travelling lifestyle, and providing providing an experience to that segment of the market is going to be it's going to put us in a strong position. Obviously, you know, we've got the general economic situation, which is weighing on things a bit, you know, particularly around fuel prices and interest rates and disposable, you know, people. Disposable income coming under pressure with all of that inflation and so forth. But I think people will still, you know, spend their money on great experiences. I think, you know, if you're going to have a choice about whether you want to go to the Big Red Bash or buy flat screen TV, people will go, well, I'll just go to the Bash. You know, like, I think it's all about, you know, I think people particularly in our demographic, you know, people in their 40s, 50s, it's all about experiences and not so much about stuff, you know. Stuff and you know, people have generally got a lot of enough stuff, and they just want to enjoy their lives. So that's where I see sort of the general situation. But yeah, interesting year coming up. Let's see where inflation and fuel prices and, you know, all the other stuff, and hopefully it'll be good times going forward.
Fingers crossed, mate. What advice would you give someone who is interested in a job in your industry, or maybe whether it's events, whether it's music, whether it's taking the leap as an entrepreneur and starting something up? Is there a particular bit of advice you'd give people?
Well, I think you know, just follow your passion and follow what you love. I think that's a pretty common thing, but you know, if you really enjoy something and you love something, you know, you'll do well. You'll find something that works for you, and you know, opportunities open themselves if you work hard and take your chances and follow your passion. You know, those doors will open.
I like it, mate. Last question. I'm an optimist by nature. I reckon you've got to be to throw the lot in and start at Outback Music Festival, the middle of the country. As I said, the middle of everywhere, I'll call it, rather than the middle of nowhere. What are you optimistic about, Greg?
Oh, look, I'm optimistic about what we've built. I mean, I know it's been a long, hard journey. I'm really optimistic that we've now developed and put together, I think, probably two of the finest festival venues you'll come across in Australia. So we've developed those great venues, and you know, I'm just optimistic that you know what we're offering is really going to be in demand, not just for 1 year or 2 years. It's something that will always stay in demand, and you know, and I'm optimistic that, you know, we've got a good team, and you know, the family involved, and you know, so I'm, you know, overall I'm optimistic. I'm sort of you've still got to have a go. I'm not someone who'll go and, you know, go to the casino and bet money on stuff, but I'll certainly roll the dice on ideas and on things that we can have some sort of control over.
Mate, it has absolutely come up trumps. Your events are spectacularly good. I can say that from experience. I've been there twice. I am absolutely sure that this year's won't be the last time I'm at the Birds of War Big Red Bash, and hopefully the Monday Bash soon enough. Speaking of which, August 18 is the Monday Bash. So if you're listening to this, there may or may not still be tickets available. I'm not sure by the time this goes out, Greg, but go to mondaymondaybash.com.au. Seriously, if you can get there, if you can get some time off work, take some time off work, get to the Monday Bash. You really won't regret it. If it's even half as good as the Birdsville Bash, it'll be spectacular, and something tells me it'll be every bit as good. So yeah, if you haven't done it yet, also jump on the socials, look up Big Red Bash or Monday Bash on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the good places you can find some stuff there. If you want some inside photos, follow my socials as well. But Greg, I really appreciate you spending a bit of time with us to take us through the story. As I said, I'm not fan number one. I must be in the top half dozen, mate, because you've just done a wonderful, wonderful job. Congratulations on everything you've done, and I look forward to seeing the plans for the Birdsville Big Red Bash, the 10th anniversary in 2023. Thanks for joining us for The Good Oil.
Thanks, Scott.
This podcast is hosted by me, Scott Phillips, produced by Ed Gooden, and imaged by Link Kelly. Listener.